Welcome to Immigration Today. I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, and today we're breaking down policies, stories, and issues that matter. You're watching Now Media Television.
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, host of Immigration Today on Now Media Television. This show brings clarity to the issues shaping immigration today, beyond the headlines and the politics, by focusing on the real systems that affect families, workers, and businesses every day. One of the most misunderstood aspects of immigration is how deeply it intersects with the U.S. tax system, its compliance, and enforcement. I'm so excited because joining me today is John Mitchell. He's a nationally recognized tax attorney based in Houston, Texas, that is, with over 30 years of experience and a former IRS appeals officer. John, welcome so much to Immigration Today. How are you?
Elizabeth, I am doing wonderful. I'm doing splendid. I'm very happy, ecstatic, overjoyed. I'm overflowing with joy to be here with you today and share some good information for the folks out there who I really thank for tuning in and watching us today.
I'm happy to get right into the segment with you. You're a tax attorney with the J. Mitchell Law Firm, PC. And over the course of your career, you've handled more than 100 million in tax controversy matters, including IRS examinations, collections, appeals, and U.S. tax court litigation. You're also a nationally published author, speaker, and you're the host of the Tax Pro podcast. I'm happy to jump right on into it if you are, with some of the questions that people I know are very excited to get answers to, if that's okay with you.
That is perfect with me. People out there, they got, you know, they got things to do. They got time and we got to jump right in, get to the meat and potatoes.
Great. Well, John, when people think about immigration, and I get this question a lot from folks asking me about my immigrant clientele, taxes are not usually the first thing that comes to mind. Are they paying their taxes? Are they not? Is it important? Why should this be one of the things that first comes to people's mind about immigration?
Well, I mean, as you know, Elizabeth, immigration for years and years, one of the main things that you have to show if you're intending to immigrate to the United States, you need to show that you have a good moral character, right? And one of the things that they take into account, they always ask for this, they ask for tax returns. So tax returns can serve as a proof that you are, obeying the law and you're paying your taxes as you're supposed to. Another thing that, people might want to take into consideration, we have to show that you're productive, that you're not going to be a drain on society, right? And so the money that you report and pay taxes on demonstrates your financial, your economic solvency, and so that's a good couple of good reasons why. And I've seen this many times. People come to me, John, can you pull transcripts from the IRS? Can you get me copies of my tax returns? I got an immigration appointment. I'm gonna have to show that. And so even immigration relief that requires you to show presence in the United States for a certain period of time, for you to be, you've got to show that you've been in the United States for X amount of time. One of the main reasons. One of the main ways that you can do that is showing that you've worked and been present and been paid taxes. So that the IRS is a very strong printouts, transcripts that you could get would be a very strong indication, because those are third party records that will bolster your claim that you've been in the United States for whatever amount of time you're claiming.
That's right. I think one of the first things we do with our clients is ask for those records, because we are trying to show that continuous physical presence in the United States, often for greater than 10 years or as long as someone's been there. And as you said, to your point, John, it's really an overarching mark of good moral character when we're sitting in front of an immigration judge or a USCIS enforcement officer or agent, rather, and trying to show that we warrant that discretion. But if someone is here undocumented, let's say, or regardless of their legal status, how are they able to pay taxes in the United States? And does that actually work for them?
You know, that is a gigantic misconception that you hear all the time out in those mean streets and even in the media, right? People say, well, undocumented people, they don't pay taxes. That is absolutely not true. I am and have been for years a certifying acceptance agent with the IRS, which means that I can review documents and process the form W-7, which will allow people to get their individual tax ID number. It's ITIN. It's a 9-digit number, just like a social security number. They're distinguishable because no social security number starts with the digit 9, but all ITINs do start with a 9. And so if you see a tax document, there's a 9 there for the person, well, you just automatically know that that is an ITIN number. And the IRS for years and years now, I don't even remember, you know, when they started doing this. It was maybe early to mid 90s, as far as I can remember, I think. They have been issuing these ITIN numbers so that people that do not have a social can go ahead and qualify for that number, and they can, comply with their tax obligations. It's not only undocumented people, by the way, have these. Let's say you're a foreign person and you've purchased real estate in the United States and you're going to sell that real estate. Well, there's maybe gains tax to be paid on the real estate. And so you need a tax ID number so that you can claim, file and claim the proper paperwork under FIRPTA, F-I-R-P-T-A, which I won't get into, but, some people that have ITIN numbers have it and they're not undocumented at all, but that is the way that people would pay taxes. So you get your ITIN number and you work and you're subject to paying taxes just like everybody else.
Now, to get that ITIN number, I was always referenced to there's an actual form online to start that process, that it's not a particularly complicated request with the IRS. Is that your experience, or do you have a different experience?
Exactly. Yeah. Like I said, I'm a certifying acceptance agent. So the normal way that this works, okay, it really is a kind of a short two-page form, a form W-7. And you just fill it out and provide the proper documentation. Most people use a passport. You fill it out and you provide the documentation. Difference being, why do I say CAA or Certified Acceptance Agent? Because the normal way you would do this, you either make an appointment and go down to the IRS, which, that's everybody. It's like Disneyland for adults, right? Everybody loves going down and go to an appointment at the IRS, right? So no, not exactly, but actually, okay. So the other way you can do it, you can stick your passport and birth certificate and whatever other important documents you have. You can stick that in a big envelope and put the W-7 form in there and send it off and just cross your fingers and hope that the government doesn't lose all your paperwork. Or you can come to an acceptance agent like me, and I will sign off on a certificate of authenticity, put a photocopy of your passport, and the IRS will process it as if it were an IRS person that saw that original documentation.
Now, a follow-up to that, if I were an undocumented immigrant and I wanted to get that I-10 number in person, because those passports and birth certificates and things are important, I don't want them to get lost. If I were to personally appear at one of the acceptance offices or one of the IRS offices, do I risk at this point in time at least being detained by an ICE agent that might be standing in front, or have you seen that, or is there any risk to undocumented individuals actually showing up to get that I-10 number?
I have never, ever witnessed that personally, and I have not heard of that happening. Now, gigantic caveat, because as you know, Elizabeth, and we're not going to get political here, but Jesus, what dark times we live in. And, I can't guarantee what ICE will or will not do, but I worked in the IRS myself, and I know that of the people there, they have a mission, right? And they do not, their mission is not to call ICE and have ICE there waiting for folks. Now, if ICE on their own decides that they're going to hang out in front of the IRS offices, well, I mean, I don't know anything that, as a former IRS employee, I don't know anything I could do to stop them from doing that. So, I mean, I would caution people, use your best judgment. Of course, you want people, we can't counsel people to not follow the law. So, sure. If you're working and making money in the United States, you should be paying taxes. And, so you're going to need your ITIN number. Maybe a good way to go about that is to go to a private certifying acceptance agent like me, right? Because ICE is certainly not camped out outside my office door. So, you could do that.
Yeah, I think in my 21 years now doing immigration law, I've never seen anybody at one of the IRS offices or the Social Security office either. And although, as you said, things may be changing, from my perspective, the US government has always had an incredibly vested interest in having people that are working in the United States who need to pay taxes, making that easy for them to do that and to collect those funds and those withholding funds. So I agree with you with that. What are some of the biggest myths you might hear about undocumented immigrants and tax compliance? And we touched on that just a little bit.
Well, one of the biggest myths is just that they don't pay taxes. That circulates around. It's just a talking point, you know. And I don't blame people. People, I'm not making fun of anybody. People have their, lives that they have to live, and so they're out there and they tune into the radio. They hear 10 minutes worth of a newscast, and somebody spouts off and says, "Well, undocumented folks, no, they don't pay taxes." And then that sticks in people's mind, and they think that that is absolutely not true. If you're working at a job and you're getting a W-2, then you're getting a paycheck stub, your check every couple of weeks. You're gonna have money taken out of that. That's gonna be, that's part of it, and so that's gonna happen. And these folks, they do pay tax. They not only that, I would add, they pay property taxes. They pay if they buy a home, they pay sales taxes if they buy a car. So they play penny tax. They pay plenty of taxes.
I think there's a lot of nonpartisan discussion too about whether the Social Security benefits that get paid out would maybe even exist if we didn't have a lot of that undocumented workforce contributing into that program. In fact, as we're sort of wrapping up here, John, what is one critical thing you wish immigrant communities understood about the IRS versus immigration authorities?
If IRS is not immigration, right? So if you do have a situation that you need to address, of course, one of your options is to, come and get a professional like us, right? But if your problem is a smaller problem and you don't really want to spend that money, you can do that. I would tell people, don't be afraid to approach the IRS with your tax problem, whatever that may be. I was in appeals, and I can tell you, I could give two rips about people's immigration status. I want to apply the tax law fairly and correctly as an IRS employee, which I am no longer, but back in the day, right? That was my focus, right? That was my concern. I want to get everybody, I want to, every file that crosses my desk, I want the proper, good, fair, equitable outcome. And so the IRS is not immigration. There is a lot more cooperation going on nowadays, unfortunately, but that's for another day.
Thank you. We'll pick that up at another time. John, thank you so much for your time and your counsel.
Yes.
We'll be right back with more insight, context, and useful information about immigration law and life. Stay with us on Immigration Today. Hi, I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, host of Immigration Today on Now Media Television. This show is a platform for clear, informed, and compassionate discussion about immigration, the policies, the processes, and the powerful personal stories behind them. We're looking for contributors who bring insight, experience, or firsthand perspective on immigration, whether you're an attorney, advocate, community leader, business owner, or someone with a compelling personal story. Immigration Today airs weekly on Now Media Television and streams across Roku, Apple TV, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, and major platforms nationwide. If you're interested in sharing your voice and helping others navigate the immigration journey with clarity and confidence, click the link below to schedule a short Zoom to connect. And we're back. I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, and this is Immigration Today on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation. Now Media Television brings you real conversations that matter. Watch Immigration Today live or on demand on Roku, iOS, or at www.nowmediatv. Welcome back to Immigration Today. I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, here with tax attorney John Mitchell. If you're just joining us, Immigration Today streams live and on demand on Now Media Television. You can watch anytime on Roku, iOS, or by visiting www.nowmedia.tv, where you'll also find the podcast version of this episode. Now, let's turn our focus to what's happening behind the scenes at the IRS and how enforcement impacts immigrant families and business owners. John, thank you so much for joining us again.
Just to kick it right off, are you seeing changes in IRS enforcement, audits, or collections activities?
As a matter of fact, yes. I mean, IRS right now is at a historically low level of staffing. So they got kind of not enough really resources, because if you look at last time I checked, it was right around 80,000 IRS employees in the United States. And that is the fewest number that it's been since the 1980s. And the population of the country has grown quite a bit since then. We're up, I don't know, between 50 to 100 million extra people in the country. It's a lot more taxpayers. That's a lot more tax returns that have to be processed. And so they're constantly being asked to do more with less. And by the way, I should mention, taxes have not gotten simpler. They've gotten, but I know it's hard to believe, but they've not gotten simpler. They've gotten more complicated. And so IRS folks are stretched. And so they, you know, it's kind of it's the same thing like with the cop, right? The cop cannot stop everybody that's speeding on the freeway, right? So he has to go after kind of, I guess, the most egregious violator, right? And so IRS is in that type of a situation right now. The probability of being audited is low because they just don't have the resources, and that's kind of the main thing that I've seen.
Why are immigrant taxpayers, especially those small business owners, are they often more vulnerable during audits?
Well, they are. I mean, because there's always in the back of their mind, first of all, if you're an immigrant, you're new-ish maybe to this country, don't understand the rules maybe quite as much as you could if you were native-born, you know, American. Maybe English is not your first language. So I've sat in on, interviews at the IRS, not only audits, examinations, but also appeals conferences where there have to be translators involved the IRS does its best to give everybody their fair consideration and stuff. But I mean, by definition, you're going to be at some kind of a disadvantage just for, knowledge of the law and how to comply with it, cultural things, and as well as language barriers. So you already, if you're an immigrant, you are in a way, or several ways, starting off kind of at a disadvantage.
Right. I think we talk about that a lot with access to justice in our courtrooms, not having translation of different documents, whether it's access to justice of government resources. Perhaps why someone might want to be coming right to you for that assistance, right?
Right.
I've had this experience myself, but what typically happens when someone avoids filing taxes for several years out of fear?
You know, fear of doing taxes is, filing those returns, whatever. I understand a lot of times, immigrant or not, a lot of times that stems from it starts off, maybe people are really tight on money. They don't have money. They know they don't have money to pay. They haven't run the numbers, so they don't know how much it is. A lot of times people way overestimate. You know, I've had it happen that people come into my office and say, I haven't filed taxes for five, 6 years, whatever, right? And they go to do their tax return and they were scared of how much money they're going to pay. Holy crap, guess what? They're getting money back, but now it's too late to claim it because they've gone past the limit of claiming it. So, it's better. And I'll tell you this, the penalties, when you start calculating failure to file penalty versus failure to pay penalty, the failure to file penalty is 5% a month. Failure to pay is 0.5% a month. So it's 10 times worse, penalty wise, to not file than it is to not pay. So my advice to people, if you are out there and you have not done a tax return because you're scared, come to a professional and let them kind of guide you through, walk you through, what kind of a situation you might be facing. It might not be as bad as you think.
Right. Right. And at least figuring out where you stand gets you a place to start moving forward and fix whatever needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
On that note, how quickly can non-filing issues escalate into things like liens or levies or even wage garnishments, meaning, right, the U.S. government's going to come actually take that money from you?
I talked to a revenue officer earlier today when I was at my office. I went in a little bit early, and I had some stuff to take care of. And it was a lady who owns a business, and
She
she
had
had
not
not
filed
filed
her
her
employment
employment
tax
tax
return
return
because
because
she
she has
has
no
no
employees,
employees,
by
by the
the
way.
way. And so, because she did not file a tax return, the IRS estimated and filed a return for her, which they will do. And now all of a sudden she's sitting on this particular lady, and I'm not giving up any secrets here because I'm not mentioning who it is, right? But this particular lady is sitting on $127,000 worth of tax liability because she didn't fill out the form and put zeros on it and sign it and send it in, right? And now I'm gonna, by the way, end of the story is I'm gonna be able to fix that, but it did not in this case. She got scared enough when she started receiving certified letters to come and seek out some help, right? And so it didn't get to levies, but she could have very easily, had she let this ride for another couple of months, I mean 2, 3 months, she probably could have been waking up to a zeroed out bank account one day.
Right. Yeah, I like to tell my clients it's much easier for me to fix something with more notice, more information, more time than making it a quick emergency that now it's compounded itself into 100 other different problems, right?
Well, I'll tell you something that you might want to use later, right? So
Yes.
I told my clients this, you do not, if your house is on fire, you don't wait 3 days to call the fire department to come out and throw water on the ashes. Get to it,
Exactly.
if you got a problem, get to it early.
Great. And I think a lot of the fear, right, is that people are afraid with the IRS that we're going to be punished or arrested or somehow. Is the IRS prioritizing punishment or compliance?
100% they prefer compliance. I mean, they wish to, in fact, you're rewarded for coming forward. I've had cases where I've argued that I made arguments about intent and centered that on, look, they didn't know XYZ, that they were liable for these taxes, but as soon as they found out that something was wrong, they stepped forward on their own and remedied the situation. And IRS has a lot of discretion to relieve penalties and abate penalties and even interest, more so penalties. But one of the big elements is that you have to have taken reasonable care and prudence, reasonable business care. If you find out something's wrong, they're not going to necessarily fault you for that, but they'll fault you if that you say, well, I figured out something was wrong 3 years ago, and today I'm trying to start working on it, right?
Right.
So so they really would rather you come forward.
Agreed. I think I say it all the time to clients have come to me and maybe they've had this problem for a length of time, 6 months, a year, 2 years, whatever it is. But from my perspective, once they've sought counsel and now they have the right answers to take corrective steps, it's a reasonable response to say, now that I know better, I'm doing those things to fix it. And that seems to go over very well with government agencies and judges and folks generally. It sounds like the same with the IRS as well.
Yes, ma'am.
That's excellent. What early warning signs should someone never ignore when they're dealing with the IRS?
The first thing that comes to mind is I have seen this 100 times or more. People show up in my office with letters that are unopened, and they've been collecting these letters in a shoebox or a grocery bag or whatever, and they come and dump it all out on my conference table. Of course, I mean, you got to blow off the dust and separate the dead cockroaches from one side and the letters on the other side, right? And you open up these letters, and these letters are from months ago, right? And so one of the, and a lot of times what really triggers people is they'll come forward when they start getting certified letters, because when they have to sign for it, that is kind of a signal to people that you should take it a bit more seriously. But I would urge you, if you start getting letters from the IRS, open them up and read them. I mean, don't just throw them away, but open up and try and understand the best you can, or look for some help to understand it. I mean, there's lots of resources. Even the IRS website, people don't know this, but every letter they send you has a letter number, right? And it says, 3504C letter, right? A LT11 letter, a 1058 letter. If you go to the IRS website, you can type that into the search bar, and there is plain language explanations of what that letter is about and what to do about it.
Excellent.
So, I mean, open your mail, folks.
Thank you, John. This is critical information, especially for families and entrepreneurs trying to stay compliant while navigating uncertainty. When we return, we'll talk about mixed status households, ITINs, and what families need to know to protect themselves. Thank you. We'll be right back with more insight, context, and useful information about immigration law and life. Stay with us on Immigration Today. Hi, I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, host of Immigration Today on Now Media Television. This show is a platform for clear, informed, and compassionate discussion about immigration, the policies, the processes, and the powerful personal stories behind them. We're looking for contributors who bring insight, experience, or firsthand perspective on immigration, whether you're an attorney, advocate, community leader, business owner, or someone with a compelling personal story. Immigration Today airs weekly on Now Media Television and streams across Roku, Apple TV, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, and major platforms nationwide. If you're interested in sharing your voice and helping others navigate the immigration journey with clarity and confidence, click the link below to schedule a short Zoom to connect. And we're back. I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, and this is Immigration Today on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation. Welcome back to Immigration Today. I'm joined again by John Mitchell, and now we're focusing on how immigration and tax systems intersect at the family level. And John, we discussed this a little bit before, but what exactly is an ITIN and who should be using one?
Yes, ma'am, Elizabeth. Thanks for that question. Yeah, the ITIN, ITIN number, is a 9-digit number. Looks just like, almost just like a Social Security number. And it is a number issued by the IRS specifically for filing tax returns and complying with your tax obligations, right? And so you get that if you do not qualify for a Social Security number and you otherwise are required to file some sort of a tax return, then you get an ITIN number, and that is there's a process. You fill out a form called a Form W-7 and present that to the IRS with valid documentation to prove your identity and status and all that good stuff, and they issue you a number. So that's the basic rundown of an ITIN.
And how common are what we call, mixed status households, and are they facing unique tax challenges when they are a mixed household?
They do, in fact, yeah, because there are certain credits, tax credits, earned income credit comes to mind. That are el you know you have to be eligible for you have to be eligible for that, you have to be a lawfully present person. So people with ITIN numbers are not going to be eligible to get earn income credit, for example. And the IRS at first did not take that take it this way, but they've interpreted the rules in recent years such that if anybody who appears on that tax return is listed with an ITIN number, then that blocks the person from receiving a credit, like earned income credit, that they would normally be eligible to get. And so sometimes you see a mixed status family, maybe mom's a citizen and dad is undocumented, and they got three kids that are bo born here, let's say. And now that entire family doesn't get their earned income credit because, one person, dad in this case, is on that tax return without a Social Security number. And in previous years, up until a couple of years ago, in fact, if dad later got his status and got a Social Security number, well, we could go back and file an amended return and capture that credit. But now even that is not allowed. So you had to have a valid Social Security number on the date that that tax return was filed. And if you even later go and get that number, you can't go back and claim the credit later. So yeah, it's its own set of rules for these mixed status folks.
Right.
What other mistakes are you seeing families make when they're filing jointly or claiming dependents?
Well, oh man, this we do a whole hour show on just this. One of the things that people try and do is file separately. So let's say in the case that we talked about, the hypothetical we just talked about, right? So sometimes what people will want to do is take dad and have him file his own tax return as a single person, and then mom will go ahead and claim a head of household status and put down the three kids, and then she'll get her earned income credit. And that will work to the extent that the IRS might not catch what you've done, right? But if they catch it, then you're paying all that money back with penalties and interest, because if you're legally married, then you have to file. The rules are kind of strict. You can't file as a single person. You've got to be file either married filing joint or married filing separate. And if it's married filing separate, both have to file married separate, and neither one gets to claim earned income credit regardless. And so, that's one of the mistakes I see people making. And a lot of times it's not even their fault. It can be due to tax return preparers who are either unscrupulous or maybe just don't understand the whole picture, tax law wise, and they know how to fill out a form. I know you've never seen this happen, but people out there in the public know how to fill out a form, but they don't understand the law behind it, right? Hello, notarios out there, right? So, sometimes that's what happens.
Right, and I'll tell you, in removal court or deportation court, the immigration judges and the attorneys for the U.S. government will go into why did you list this person this way on this tax return on this year? So it does need to be done correctly for obvious reasons for the IRS, but also those papers come back in various forms. Which leads me into, is there ever a situation where tax information is being shared with immigration authorities?
If you asked me that a couple of years ago, I would say, oh no, that would be super rare, super, super rare. I mean, maybe if you're some listed person like a narco trafficker or something, then for law enforcement purposes, DOJ or IRS would be able to access, immigration could access your tax records or vice versa. But recently under the Trump administration, and again, not to get political, but they have kind of broken down some of those barriers. And so the privacy protections that existed before are not as strong as they were. And so you got to be cognizant of that, depending on what, situations and circumstances come about.
You're right. I think it was in November there was a case out of the District of Columbia where a judge did actually block the IRS from handing over home addresses to ICE. I think it was the Citizens of Taxpayers versus the IRS or Center for Taxpayer Rights, I think it was, which was a pretty neat case. And then in December, we started to hear some rumblings about a planet, a Palantir, artificial intelligence with ICE, and we're interested in more information on how those databases might be sharing in the future. So I think times might be changing, but you're right. Up until now, it has been super rare and in very specific instances. Leading into that, then, how can families remain compliant while also protecting themselves?
Well, let's say you're either a mixed status family or you're a person who is otherwise obligated to file a tax return. Again, we can't counsel people to not file tax returns. One of the things that I have been able to do is list a nominee address when we get the W-7. So I will address everything care of J. Mitchell Law Firm, and let ICE come knocking on my door and see how far that gets them, right? So that's one thing that we've done. And I don't know where you're located. I don't remember. I apologize. But here in Texas, there are recent regulations. DMV has said that you now cannot register a vehicle or renew your registration if you don't have proper immigration documents. So no more showing your Mexican or Salvadorian passport when you go down to pay your registration sticker for your car. And so now, how many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people are going to be without the ability to register their vehicles properly. And so we implemented a program, and I've tried this out a few times. And if people can afford to pay the freight on it, we will register the vehicle in a trust. And that way the trustee gets to show their ID when you renew the vehicle sticker, which I have gladly served as trustee on a few of these.
Right. So that's not something I had thought of before, and something I will certainly send folks your way. It is remarkable when you seek the advice of a lawyer, some of the not even creative solutions, but just the lawful and legal solutions to following the law that can help families and people have that extra layer of protection.
Yes,
I'm
ma'am.
actually
Yes,
in Wyoming, so we have some interesting issues with how people are navigating our highways and streets and law enforcement. But yeah. What advice do you give parents who are now trying to plan financially amid this growing and ongoing uncertainty?
You know, these are dark times, and I definitely think that it's, if it were me, and I can't give really financial, planning. I mean, I guess in a way I can, but I want to be careful and, tell them your mileage may vary. Be sure and, check with a, licensed financial planner or something, right? But, in my case, I would definitely be thinking things like keeping, keep my liquidity on hand, make sure, if I were an undocumented person, I would definitely try and have my account with an authorized signer, a very well trusted person, maybe mom, dad, brother, sister, somebody really close to me, add their name to the account in case I get deported, then they can, at least access that money and send it to me, So yeah, that's a couple of things that I would be thinking about.
I think you're right, John, seeking out that counsel and being able to figure out those nuances with a trust or a power of attorney or who's accessing funds. And really reaching out to get that information. For some reason, I know it can be scary for people to reach out to talk to us, but clearly there's no reason why, and we can give some good strategies on how to be helpful and how to give people protection. But John, I really thank you so much for explaining this with such clarity for those that are watching. And when we come back for our final segment, we'll talk about preparation, how families and business owners can reduce risk and build stability moving forward.
We'll be right back with more insight, context, and useful information about immigration law and life. Stay with us on Immigration Today. Hi, I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, host of Immigration Today on Now Media Television. This show is a platform for clear, informed, and compassionate discussion about immigration, the policies, the processes, and the powerful personal stories behind them. We're looking for contributors who bring insight, experience, or firsthand perspective on immigration, whether you're an attorney, advocate, community leader, business owner, or someone with a compelling personal story. Immigration Today airs weekly on Now Media Television and streams across Roku, Apple TV, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, and major platforms nationwide. If you're interested in sharing your voice and helping others navigate the immigration journey with clarity and confidence, click the link below to schedule a short Zoom to connect. And we're back. I'm Elizabeth Trifonis, and this is Immigration Today on Now Media Television. Let's continue the conversation.
Welcome back to Immigration Today. I'm Elizabeth Trifonis. And if you found today's conversation helpful, you can watch this episode and every episode of Immigration Today anytime on Now Media Television. You can stream live or on demand on Roku, iOS, or at www.nowmedia.tv. where you can also listen to the podcast version of the show. In this final segment with John Mitchell, we're focusing on empowerment, how preparation can replace panic in uncertain times. And John, you often emphasize preparation over panic. What does proactive tax compliance look like today?
You know, one of the things that I stress to people is to take care of the problems early on. A lot of times people come to me when there's already a problem, but one of the things you can do as far as being proactive is to just tackle things before they become a problem. And I know even in my life when I'm dealing with something that I'm not quite familiar with, I hire an attorney that knows something about that to walk me through it. And I recommend people do the same. It's they have a saying in Spanish, lo barato cuesta más, something like that, right? Which means, if you try and go cheap, then it's going to end up more expensive for you in the end, right? And so it's usually a lot of times worth a quick consult to just make sure that you're headed in the right direction. And so that might be a good way for people to start. Check out your tax professional or your professional in whatever area it may be that you're going to tackle next, right? Tax, immigration, it's all the same. Just you get a professional involved. You're probably going to be glad that you did.
Yep, get an expert when you need an expert, or use the tool that's is for the project, right?
Yes.
When should someone stop trying to handle that tax issue on their own and actually reach out for that professional help?
I'm not here to tell people don't try and solve their own problems, right? Like I'm a believer in that, right? But I would say when you get to the point where you're at a decision point and you're not sure which way to go, that's a good sign, right? I always tell people this, right? I can change, I had a brother who was in the military for many years, and he works on jet airplane engines and stuff like that. Now I can change the tire on my car if I have to. I could even change the oil, but I could not rebuild the engine because that's beyond what I know how to do. And so if I were to pop the hood and start taking parts off, and then I realize all of a sudden, holy crap, I don't know what to take off next or what to do next. That's a good point where you're going to say, dang, I need to get somebody involved that knows what they're doing.
Right. We have a saying in my law firm here that when you start to ask the question if you need help, you kind of know the answer to that. That's when you should have a low threshold for reaching out for some assistance and getting some more information.
Yes, ma'am.
What documents or records should families or business owners prioritize keeping organized as they're putting together this plan or trying to keep when they come to see you, what are the things that you'd love to see them having organized throughout this time?
Well, I'm going to say, and again, most of the times people come to me, they already have some kind of tax problem. I'm going to want to see anything that you've filed with the IRS, let's say tax return wise. If it's an audit type situation, I'm going to want to see income and expenses, right? So if you told me that your gross income was, I don't know, I'm making this up, $180,000 last year. Well, are you able to show me bank statements with $180,000-ish in deposits, right? Will your records back up what you have on that tax return, right? If you say you had I don't know, $5,000 worth of car repairs, do you have receipts to back that up, right? So that's going to be kind of the most important thing, right? All of your taxes are all about, I tell people this all the time, taxes are all about income and expenses, right? And so whatever documentation you have to back up that income and back up those expenses, that's going to get us pretty far down the road. And also, I would want people to walk in the door, fingers crossed, right? I hope they walk in the door with any correspondence they've received from the IRS, right?
Sure.
Hopefully it's opened and you've at least taken a look at it to try and understand it. Even if it's not, they'll bring it in. So I like to see any correspondence because a lot of times I need to gauge where we are in the process so that I can figure out what tools I still have available to help you with, right? Like you may have waited so long that certain things are now past deadlines and I can't appeal anymore, or I can't do this, or I can't do that. So, I need to see the kind of the history of whatever is going on there, and the correspondence trail is really helpful in that.
Right. I think leading into the next question here, how are some ways that folks can reduce fear or understand the tax system and reduce fear around immigration uncertainty and, you know, coming to you and discussing those issues? And are there other suggestions that you might have to have help people feel more secure in that dynamic?
You know, I didn't make this up, but there's an old saying about fear. What is fear? False evidence appearing real. And so the first thing I would say, very important that you can do to kind of help yourself out, is gather as much information as you can about what's going on, right? Because the more you know, the better equipped you are to deal with things. And I'm not one that hates for people to, you know. Now, on the one hand, I do have a coffee mug that says, "Don't confuse your Google search with my law degree." And so that's true too. But on the other hand, I don't tell people to not look things up and research things. Hell, when I go to the doctor, I type my symptoms into WebMD, and so that I have an idea what's going on. I could be right or wrong, whatever, but at least I've tried to educate myself somewhat. But I know that the doctor is the doctor, and I'm going to know that if they tell me, "No, Johnny, the thing you looked up is not right," okay, I have to abandon that then. But at least, try to understand what's going on with whatever situation you're facing, and that's going to go a long way towards keeping that fear level down.
Agreed, that fear of the unknown or just not willing to look at it. And I have that happen a lot where clients are coming to me, they've researched their immigration options as well, and I encourage that. I don't take it as a challenge. In fact, I take it more as a way to have a more clear and in-depth conversation. But I do like your coffee mug very much. I get one myself. What is one step viewers can take right now this month to reduce that long-term financial and legal risk or that exposure moving forward?
Well, again, I mean, if I could name just one thing that people could do, even if you don't have an immigration problem, or even if you don't have a tax problem, maybe set up a consult and go in and get to know somebody. I read a book once that said, "Don't wait until you're thirsty to start digging a well." And so, maybe if you have an inkling that there might be something going on that you might want some help with down the road, I mean, go ahead and set up a consult and get, go down and, make two or three appointments. Heck, go get to know two or three professionals, see who you feel comfortable with, and start that conversation earlier rather than later.
Right. Right. And lastly, very quickly, and then I'm going to want to be sure to get information on how people can contact you. What final message would you leave with immigrant families and entrepreneurs watching today, John?
I would say that the big, and I say this all the time, my number one message for you is, you are not alone. You don't have to face this by yourself. You got me in your corner, or, in such case, you got Elizabeth in your corner. You're not facing it alone. You're not alone. Come to us. We're here to help you.
Great. John, thank you again for bringing clarity. And you're right, this is all about this information getting out there to express to people where they can find resources and the assistance. Thank you for your expertise and your calm on a topic that does cause a lot of anxiety. For our viewers, where can they connect with you and your educational resources?
Absolutely. I guess the number one best way that people could get in touch with me is through my website. So my website is www.99, so the number 99-taxhelp.com. And if you just go to my website, 99taxhelp.com, my email is there, and contact us page, and the phone number, 1-800-99-TAXHELP. But phone's probably not the very best way off the time. You call me on the phone when you're already my client, in other words, right? But if you're trying to make an initial contact, really, it's going to be better for you. Shoot me an email, go to the website, find my email address, and shoot me an email. I am happy to hop on a quick call with people and even other professionals, right? Like I talked to CPAs, enrolled agents, tax attorneys, other attorneys all the time. So I'm an open book. I'm transparent. I love to help other professionals with things. And so folks out there, feel free to give me a ring.
Thank you so much, John. Today, immigration is not just about borders. It's about systems, responsibility, and stability. On Immigration Today, our mission is to replace fear with facts and empower families through understanding. I'm Elizabeth Trifonis. Thank you for watching, and we'll see you next time.